Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Dear listeners, greetings and a loving Sairam from Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. This is a segment Service Love in Action, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. Well, at the very outset, as always, let us all collectively offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, the voice and listener of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Well, dear listeners, one of the scriptural maxims that beloved Bhagwan often reminds us is Sarva Deva Namaskaram Keshavam Pratigacchati. That is, all prayers, irrespective of faith and religion, ultimately reaches God Almighty, who is referred as Keshava in this maxim. So, talking about prayer, I am reminded of a beautiful experience that Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram, a long-standing devotee, had shared in one of her talks. So it seems once she was in New York and she had visited a Broadway show, and during the interval she just went to the washroom. And there she found a Spanish lady who was cleaning the bathrooms. So when she came out, the Spanish lady just kept looking at Geeta Mohan Ram, and she came near her and asked her if she was an Indian. For this, Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram said that yes, she was an Indian. And then the Spanish lady asked, "Do you know Sai Baba?" Well, Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram was a little surprised, and she indeed said, "Yes, I know Sai Baba, I know." Then the Spanish lady asked for some white powder. So Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram was puzzled, and she asked why she was asking for that. So for this, the Spanish lady said, it seems her small daughter, is unwell. Doctors had told her that her daughter's kidneys were not functioning, so she has to be operated, but this lady was a poor lady and she couldn't meet the finance. And so, from 4 days, this lady is praying to God. That is, she is praying to Jesus. Every night, it seems she was praying to Jesus to save her daughter's life. And just 4 days back, she had a dream during night. And in that dream, a person with curly hair, short person with curly hair, wearing a orange robe, had come. And in the dream, that person had told her that her daughter will be very fine. In another 4 days from now, a lady from India will come to you and ask the lady for vibhuti, that is white powder. And it seems the person had vanished away. But the Spanish lady didn't care about the dream, and she continued praying to Jesus Christ. Because the Spanish lady didn't know who Sai Baba was, who Swami was. She was a Christian and she just prayed to her God, that is Jesus Christ. And again, next day, again, she got a dream in which this person, Sai Baba, came with curly hair and orange robe and told her that a lady from India will be coming and meeting you and give her, and you ask her for white powder. So that's why it seems that Spanish lady had asked Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram for white powder. And of course, Geeta Mohan Ram was surprised listening to this story, and she opened her purse and she found to her amazement a few packets of vibhuti that Swami had created for her just a couple of months back when she had come to Puttaparthi. So she immediately took the packets of vibhuti and gave it to that Spanish lady. Now this episode was over. It was 6 months later that when she again came to Puttaparthi, and then Swami called her for an interview. And of course Geeta Mohan Ram had forgotten about this episode, but Swami had not forgotten, and it seems Swami told her, "See, that girl with kidney problem, she is absolutely fine. No need of any kidney retransplant or anything. She is absolutely fine." And Geeta Mohan Ram suddenly didn't get what Swami is talking about. Then Swami reminded her that yes, I had came in that Spanish lady's dream, and I told her that a lady from India will be coming, and it was you, and you did a very good job by giving her the packet of vibhuti. So you see, dear listeners, whomever we pray, to whichever God we pray, it ultimately reaches Swami. Well, being at Radio Sai, working for Swami here at Radio Sai, we get numerous chances to listen to Swami's devotees' experiences. And these experiences enriches our devotion to Swami, our love for Swami. So just, I thought that it will be a very good start to begin this segment, Service, Love and Action, by narrating one of such experiences that I heard. Well, dear listeners, today is 31st of July and the time in our studio is 11:16 a.m. and it's a very pleasant and fine day here at Prashantalam Ashram. The temperatures are very cool and comfortable, and it's a mixture of sunlight and cloud. It looks as if the sun god and clouds are playing this game of hide and seek or something like that. A picture perfect weather condition. So today in this segment, Service, Love and Action, I'll be playing for you a very interesting and useful, encouraging conversation with a member of Sri Satya Sai Seva organization of the states of Maharashtra and Goa. And in this conversation, he will be talking to us about a very, very useful subject, that is rainwater harvesting. And this conversation I had recorded in the month of July, 11th of July to be precise. So let's listen to this conversation.
Sai Ram sir, greetings and a warm welcome once again to Radio Sai Studios.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram.
So since now you are coming for the second time, you may be aware that this is a segment, Service, Love and Action. And in this segment, we talk to Swami's devotees and listen to their experience of being involved in service activities.
Yeah, yeah.
So last time when you came here, you spoke to us about the Chembur Dust Group in Chembur, Mumbai, and the impressive service activities that you all conduct there. Midnight Scholar Seva, the Bol Bindas class, then kidney and cancer patient Seva.
Yeah, that's right.
Then the overnight meditation and etc. In fact, after listening to the interview, we got many positive feedback appreciating the Seva activities.
Oh,
it was really wonderful. And you had also told us briefly about the rainwater harvesting last time. So this time we want you to tell us in detail about the rainwater harvesting project. So once again, Sai Ram, and at the very outset, let us start by you telling us what is rainwater harvesting.
Yeah. See, the entire country, you may be seeing, there are reports world over how in India there's going to be a water scarcity situation looming large. There are many villages, for example, take Maharashtra, where we are focusing right now. 11,000 villages were drought hit in 2012. So every NGO in this country has to be directly or indirectly involved in rainwater harvesting. That is the least we can do to mitigate this misery arising out of water scarcity. The rainwater harvesting is every village is getting adequate rain other than those years where there is a drought declared. Mm. In the normal years, enough rainfall is there. What was happening before is all this water, rainwater, was collecting in the natural water bodies around the village. And those water bodies have dried up because of heavy silting and nobody bothered to desilt, which we used to do in those olden days. And as a result, all these water bodies have started, you know, vanishing. Apart from that, all the rainwater which is falling in the village, because they are not collected in the water bodies, they get just washed out and evaporate. And to add to the misery, because of whatever reason each one had, they started in their backyard this borewell.
Mm.
And rampantly, every well, so much of borewells are dug.
Yes.
And of the water body underneath has completely gone dry, or the water table has gone down, as we say. And the rainwater harvesting is nothing but collecting this rainwater either on the rooftop or as a runoff and putting them down to reach the, what we call technically aquifer, the water table below.
Mm.
Rainwater harvesting is collecting this rainwater and reaching the groundwater table. That is what it is.
Wonderful. So what are the different ways of rainwater harvesting?
See, right now, there are so many agencies working at different levels. There are macro projects, the macro level, where you can spend crores of rupees and you take a cluster of villages and spend a few crores and create huge water bodies, dig canals, check dams and all that at a macro level.
Mm.
At a micro level, in a village, you can simply collect the runoff water and recharge bore wells and wells.
The existing bore wells and wells.
So that you don't have to again dig another bore well to put the water down. In each village, you'll find at least a couple of abandoned wells and bore wells. Mm. Abandoned because water is not coming out of that. And these bore wells were used to take water out. And we do the reverse. Okay. Now take the rainwater and put it inside.
Mm.
So this is one model. And storage. Though the storage cannot be very huge, artificial storages like there are ferro cement tanks and all can be built. And we are in touch with such agencies also. So that also helps. So storage is one, and then harvesting water recharge. These are the two models we do. The recharging could be the runoff water or the rooftop water.
Mm.
So these are the models we have. Apart from these, we can also build small check dams. And there are some bigger models like there's a small hillock or something. We can also do CCT, or continuous contour trenching. So the water falling on the mountain, they get collected by a scientific process and brought down and the aquifer is recharged. So these are the different models right now available.
So artificial water bodies means you construct some tanks or something?
Yeah, actually wherever there is a possibility of creating, see we just go and see natural water bodies. If they are already available, we do the desilting, which is the most cost effective. Apart from that, if there is no possibility existing like that, then what we do is create a artificial water storage by digging a pond.
Okay.
Mm. Using the JCB and a lot of earth moving equipments are available now. Very cost effective. We can create artificial water body in 2 days time.
Mm-hmm. So you are talking about silting and desilting. Please throw some light on it.
Actually what happened, as I told, this natural water body which existed in the village beforehand, over a period of time they get silt. The rainwater which is flowing during the rainy season, you can find a lot of mud, muck collecting.
Mm.
And because of that, the depth of those water bodies reduce.
Okay.
So they get silted. And also the canals where they have already built certain check dams, you know, earthen dams are there and all. There also you will find silting on one side. It's a big mound, you know. So because of that, we have seen in many villages, the water in the check dam also flow over that and the depth is not there. So enough water is not collected at the back. So if you do as a desilting, means, you know, excavating and throwing out the mud.
Mm.
And restoring the original position. That is a desilting.
Okay.
So by doing that, you are bringing back to the situation when it was originally constructed.
Mm.
So the, again, water starts accumulating those water bodies.
So now, in this rainwater harvesting, from when you are involved?
Actually, just before 2012, when the drought was declared, it was very pathetic. As I said, 11,000 villages in Maharashtra was declared as drought hit and they were all suffering.
In 2012?
Just before 2012, the summer. And we had no clue about how these things work. No? So I went for a survey just to understand, because every day morning as you open the newspaper, you hear about this water scarcity, and you open the TV, you hear about the debates on water scarcity and everybody talking about the water and the misery it brings about. Just to have first-hand experience about this, I went to a village which was declared drought hit and huge water scarcity. On the, all the women folk of the village were carrying head loads of that containers and then going to 2-3 kilometers out of the village to fetch water. So I just went there and I saw these people going and I asked them, now if somebody wants to provide water, how can they help? They said the water tanker can come there and the village well, which is fully rocky and dry, they can store the water there. Then we said, no, instantly, that is the one thing which you can do readily, because this rainwater harvesting and all will come after the rain comes. For rainwater harvesting, rain is very important.
Yes, yes.
So the rain is not there, there's no...
You collect the rainwater. Water.
Correct.
Hmm.
So the instantly what we can do is only get a tanker water and put it in the well. Then I just back of the knowledge calculation, I found out the cost involved was only 10 to 12,000 rupees in a village. Only 2 days, if the water tankers come, then that is enough so that they get minimum water. They don't have to go out for drinking water and all that. Though their village would insist on getting water every day from the tanker, I said nothing, only 2 days is enough. We just calculated enough water. So like the 11 villages, we pooled money ourselves among our friends and provided this water tanker across Maharashtra, 11 villages we chose and gave this tanker water.
For 2 days?
2 days in a week.
Okay, 2 days in a week. Huh?
Okay, but around 10 to 12,000 a month was the cost. So we managed with that, all the 11 villages. Proof of concept is, the village women should not go out for fetching water. So that's the objective. And it happened like that.
During summer you provide?
Yeah, that summer. Only summer is only, yeah, that's the only issue. So 3-4 months in a year is a problematic ones, no? So we did that. And then after that was over, then we went around asking people, what is a long-term solution, no? Every summer you cannot keep, giving tanker water all over Maharashtra. Then somebody said, you have to go and meet Anna Hazare. It is done in Raligam Siddhi. It's a successful. It's a village in Maharashtra. Okay. Anna Hazare has been known for that and he got awards. The village is very well known in rainwater harvesting.
Okay.
So we went there. We met Anna Hazare. And he has advised us, go only for rainwater harvesting. We said, okay, we'll put our act together and come back to you again. I said, and then I came back. We have wanted to structure the whole process. The very important thing is what we bring on table is our management experience. So we wanted to structure the whole process, approach it very methodically, and we have a clear objective. So we collected all the people who are interested, like-minded people, and we told our organization, Satya Sai organization, and that this is what we intend to do. And the entire Maharashtra, when there was a meeting where all these people congregated, in that meeting, we declared our intention to go for rainwater harvesting and whoever is interested in participating in the seva can come forward. So we collected people. Then we said, who would be interested in this project? We would appoint one Sai Jal Mitra in each affected district. Sai Jal Mitra means a friend of water. No? Sai Jal Mitra. We called it a Sai Jal because we are coming from a Sai organization. So it will be called Sai Jal. And whoever is working on the project for that will is a coordinator. Well, coordinator is called Sai Jal Mitra.
Okay, yes.
Like that we appointed. We are still coordinators. We are not technical people. So what I did, we should understand this from the technical perspective. So we spoke to Padma Shri Dr. Sunita Narayan in Delhi CSE. And she said, you have to come and do a course, advanced rainwater harvesting. So the core team members, we went to Delhi, we got ourselves trained for 3 days, intense training on rainwater harvesting. By doing that, we were able to appreciate the different aspects of this technical subject.
Yes.
Then we came back, still we were not ready to implement this. So what we did was to have a panel. In that panel, we'll have all the experts in rainwater harvesting, geologists, the engineers, who have got experience in this line. And we made a panel and many people readily joined that. And that included IIT Mumbai. So they expressed their interest in joining our group because they called us and then when they met them and they were very keen to be a part of this and advise us. So they were also there. That is on the technical side. So after having done that, we conducted a workshop with all these experts, geologists who are involved in that, award winners and all that. For implementation, see, the point is so much of knowledge is available on this subject. And so much of money is there. There are philanthropists who are prepared to donate. All these we found out. Water is a very sensitive subject. The point is implementation. So before our getting into the implementation, I went and found out what all things happened in those failed projects. So that we don't repeat that.
Okay.
So some of the failed projects we have taken and studied that as well. So then we learned at the implementation level, unless you have a person who is very dedicated, the project is likely to fail. And that is the reason why many projects have failed. And there are over-enthusiastic people who go there and blow up money and still the water is not there. The projects have happened, but water is not there. That also we studied and understood. There are vested interests. Like that, there are so many other reasons why the projects fail. So we understood all that, and after that we wanted to go out with our own model. We have configured a model. We wanted to take a position in the entire spectrum. So our position was the low end. So low end retail model. Because we didn't want to go, we could have gone like Raleigh Gaon City or other bigger macro level projects for which you need government funds.
Okay.
Crores of rupees are required. Or a very big NGO who is willing to spend crores of rupees on one village. We didn't want to go on a macro level. We were convinced that it is possible to do it at a micro level by spending little money. And for that, we wanted somebody who has implemented a similar low cost model elsewhere and also successful. So then we were looking for that, and then that year award winner was there, one Mr. Sikandar. His model was a low cost rainwater harvesting model and he got many awards. So we contacted him, we asked him to join us. Because we have a big list of villages in Maharashtra which are drought hit. And he came and he joined us. In the sense that he would be the implementing agency and we would pool the resources and there'll be a handholding. Together we implemented. So when we are ready to implement, then again we went back to our Saijal Mitras and told them to identify the villages. So the model was they will keep identifying all the drought hit villages. We will go and do the survey with PhD in geology. Dr. Amar Joshi was on our panel. He helped us. So we used to go there, identify the villages, survey them, and then a report was made. As per the technical expert, that is geologist report, that implementation agency would come and fix things for us. So that is how the project implementation model was done. So we went about doing that one after another, many villages.
Okay. So initially you started with 11 villages.
No, we didn't have a number as such in our mind and we started. We said, no, we are ready. As and when the villages come up, we'll keep doing it.
Okay.
Till the monsoon arrives. Once the monsoon comes, then we have to stop because the monsoon would have taken over. Then it is ready to implement the project when it is raining heavily.
Yes.
So, till the we reach the monsoon condition, we would continue. So, that is how, up to that point, we had 11 villages. There are more villages in the pipeline, but we could not continue because of the rain. And the monsoon that time was very, very heavy, last monsoon.
Okay.
So after it stopped again, we started. Then we started again, we did another total in all 25 villages till date we have done, and still going on. As I'm talking to you, some villages work is going on. So there's this time the rain has been delayed, and then we had a dry spell in between. So we used that to our advantage.
So how often the volunteers go to the villages?
Actually, the volunteers are led by the Saijal Mitra, and the moment your village is identified by the Samiti. So initially what we told was, let us only take those villages where have existing relationship. That would mean our Sai Samiti is going there doing bhajan, Narayan Seva, Bal Vikas, or medical seva and such activities. Because there is a running relationship with the village, and the village is also water scarcity is there, then it is all the more easier for us because there are already a pre-existing relationship. So these volunteers, anyway they are going to the village and the villages know these volunteers, that makes it all the more easy for us in selling the concept of rainwater harvesting.
Yes, definitely.
So they really do that. So once the project starts, very important thing is, there are certain ground rules we laid. The ground rules are, the village has to convene a meeting and pass a resolution saying that they are prepared to offer shramdan, voluntary help.
Okay.
So all these volunteers come from the village to help because there's a lot of digging and other things have to be done. So unless the villagers help, no, there'll be
physical labor.
Yeah, physical labor. So it's a voluntary labor, which they offer free, the villagers. But there are certain pockets where technical people are required, which we hire for a fee. Like the geologist is hired, and some technical supervisors are hired, the implementation agency is hired. So village volunteers can only dig and do all this manual labor from their side. From our side, that is our volunteer side, the core team which goes from Mumbai to those places for implementation, they have to bear all their expenses themselves. Because in this, what we told was, whoever is donating for this, 100 rupees, 101 rupees should be spent. You know why it was like that? Because many places, wherever we have talked to people about this, they told these NGOs, the biggest problem is, the whatever money you donate, 30 to 40% of that go only for their overheads. This kind of complaint, not about us, but generally they were telling, this is a problem. So when you're talking about a water project or any other project for that matter, whatever money is donated, 30% go for, according to them, 30 to 40% go for overheads only. So the rest of the money, whatever left over, is only going to the project. This, many people complain like this. Now we heard this. So after that, we also thought we should go in a different model. Why is overhead so high? Because you charge your overheads to the project. We said, you know, all the water projects, what we do, there will be no voucher for conveyance, communications, sumptuary, whatever expenses, other than direct expense required for the project. So when we travel there, it is on us. When we eat food, lodging, everything on us. So we have to bear the respective expenses. The volunteers will bear. Apart from that, whatever is the project money donated or the project cost, we will add 1% from our pocket. The volunteers have to put from their pocket to that.
Okay.
So that 101% of the money would be spent on the project. That is what we wanted to prove. So in all those cases so far we have done, there is not a single head of expense other than the project requirement, project material and labor. No other expenses. So the entire money goes. So it's the most effective way of utilizing the money for the project. So that is how we have done that.
So now, till the 25 villages you have covered, right?
Yeah.
So one village, how much time it takes generally?
Each village is a different story.
Yes.
As per the survey, we identify those abandoned wells and borewells. So that we don't have to again incur cost in drinking another borewell to put the water down. So if there are four spots where we do the work, the time required is more. And if it's less, it is less.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
And again, there are challenges. Everywhere it is not only recharge a borewell well from rooftop or runoff water. It is not like that. There could be situations where not a single borewell is available and there is no need. Only water body, existing water bodies are so many, just excavating them is enough. So like that. And some places only earthen dam has to be built. It has taken a very long time. It is only one piece that earthen dam has to be built, like that we have done in Karasgaon. So like that, each village has a different kind of background and different requirement. So based on that, the time is taken. That is how it is.
Definitely. So can you share some experience of these 25 villages?
Yeah, actually in a village called Karasgaon, when we went there, they told 20 years back, there was a earthen dam there, very long one, and it was washed off because of the flood. Before that, there would be a water accumulation, big lake over there, and nearly 22 village wells were full of water because of the water accumulation over there, the rainwater collected over there. And 20 years back, when it was breached, and we could literally not see anything except a big gap. They said there existed a earthen dam here.
Yeah.
After that vanished, all these village wells nearby would go dry every summer. And so much of misery, water scarcity, all the women have to go 3-4 kilometers to fetch water. They asked us whether we can help. Now I said, okay, we can do that provided you promise Shramdan.
Yes.
As I told earlier, the procedure is the village has to come in a panchayat meeting, pass a resolution and assure us that there would be Shramdan. Then we give them technological help and we also fund the project. We see that it is implemented with their help. That is we go about.
Shramdan is the villagers should come forward in physical.
Construction. So Karasgaon is a village where there was so much of Shramdan requirement was there because we have to rebuild the whole earthen dam. And we brought engineers and geologists to identify what was the fault in the earlier dam, why it breached. And not only once, it breached twice. This is what they told. So then we identified the fault areas and they gave a different design this time. So all the permissions, another thing is we cannot do anything illegal. Permission from the required government authorities are required wherever it is required and stuff like that. So we told them, you go about getting all the permissions. So they did. They gave the resolution, got the permissions also. After that, we told our Saijal Mitra over there, come on, go headlong into it, see that it is implemented. And entire village came. It is very heartening to see all of them participating very actively. And that huge digging was done. JCBs came and the project was completed. The most touching moment was, after it was completed, the rain came, the water accumulated like before.
Okay.
And huge lake of water was there. Uh-huh. And the villagers told, when we went there, all the migratory birds which used to come, they remembered that 20 years back, all the birds came back.
Wow.
They somehow knew there's a water body and again there's vegetation, greenery, everything. And they had a bird sense or whatever, and they came first. After the animals drinking water. So when we went there, we could just see all the animals coming and drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And the collector appreciated our local Saijal Mitra and other people. And the government people also told, if they had done it, that it would have crossed even 10 lakh rupees. We could do it very economically at such a low cost and very effectively. And the proof of that, you know, whether we are successful or not, would be known only during summer.
Mm.
I always tell people, your rainwater harvesting is successful or not, you would know only the next summer.
Yes.
They should not be experiencing the same difficulties that they did last summer before the project. The next summer, we found all these 21, 22 wells were full of water.
Oh, good, nice.
And the entire summer, there was no need for bringing water from outside by a tanker or by other means. So that was a success story. Similarly, in another village called Thad, we were surprised to know, in a place like Thad, which is Gajanan Maharaj, he's a great saint of Maharashtra, it was his birthplace. And when we went there, we found a tanker, they wanted tanker water to come because there is so much of water scarcity. Our team went around, I also saw, we asked them, no, so many years back, where were the water bodies? Then they showed those places where the water bodies were, their pond and tank and whatnot. We identified those places. Then our geologist was brought in and he also saw. There was no need to do any recharge and all. Just these water bodies, which were plenty, were to be excavated, desilted and restored. If you do that, that's enough. That's what he said. And there was also a earthen dam, which was completely silted. Small quantum of water also wouldn't stay. So they all flow out. So all these spots were identified. And then we used the JCV, you'll be surprised, less than 60,000 rupees, the whole village, you could get the water bodies restored. And the proof of that again would be only in summer. As I'm talking to you now, yesterday some people came from the village for Parthi Seva. They told that at this point in time, as we're talking, 8 feet of water is there in the well.
Okay.
Last year, the well was dry. So that's a proof that these things have been working. So it was very heartening to know that in Thad village, and there was no need for any tanker water to come there like last year. So in most of the villages where we are done, there was this tanker water was stopped and people didn't go out this summer. So that itself is a reward for our work. Similar situation also existed in another village called Nageshwadi in Buldana. There also we didn't have to do any recharge, but only plain excavation, desilting using JCB. There also we could see this summer there was no need for them to go out. All these wells had water, enough water. So that's a kind of reward we see, Swami's blessings for the entire team.
Nice. Now, sir, out of your experience, can you share with our listeners few techniques through which the villagers themselves can make sure that the groundwater level is up to the mark?
Yeah, first thing is, they should not go for indiscriminately for borewells.
Digging borewells.
Because when the water level goes down, they keep on going for more and more borewells. That will just take out the water, and the water body, water level goes down further. After some point, all the borewells will go dry. So instead of that, they should make attempts to store the rainfall. See, whatever rainfall is there in that particular village, theoretically, we should do something by which the water doesn't go out and evaporate. If you don't internalize the water and put it into the aquifer, they will just be flowing on the surface and evaporate.
Yes.
So there are so many things which they can do. As I said, the existing water bodies, they have to do desilting. If you really go back, even 50 years back also, in many of the villages in India, there is a village program in which all the villages would collect and do desilting of the village pond and the village tanks.
That is basically cleaning, digging it.
Yeah, cleaning and taking out all the silt and then deepening it. Deepening of the ponds.
Okay.
Which was done even with a religious fervor. Many places, no, it is mandatory in the village for the villagers to join and do that. Which we have stopped because of the rampant construction activities and stuff, and then all these ponds went dry. Restore the water bodies. That is one. And then the runoff water, in every village, you would find people with knowledge about this water. And also in the nearby towns, there are geologists available, technical people available, who can do this water harvesting model, what we said. So use their resources, their expertise, and this rooftop. Every village will have panchayat office or the school, a big school. The school would have a big roof or a temple. So these are the three public places where you find a huge roof. The panchayat office, the village office or something, and then the school. These are the place or a temple. The roofs are available for rooftop rainwater harvesting.
So in the terrace, they should collect the rainwater.
Yeah, they collect the rainwater because the rooftop rainwater is very clean. So initially after the what we call as first flush, you just allow the first flush to go through, all the dirt will go away. The second rain onwards, the water collected will be very, very safe and clean. This water has to be collected and again taken to a soak pit and then internalized or a nearby well. Or a bore well, where you can use it for a recharging. See, this expertise is available in the nearby town. So they can use this expertise. The Gram Sevak also can tell, that the government also helps. If the village is determined to do it, there are a lot of things they can do to prevent the water from flowing out of the village.
So a little bit of knowledge and awareness, if it is there, then...
Yeah, that's true. See, the many villages we have seen, the local villagers, some of the local villagers themselves have this knowledge and the skill to do it. What is not available is cooperation among themselves. Somebody has to take a leadership and resources to do that. And the willingness.
Yes.
See, if that awareness is there, see, right now, when the drought is there, everybody is running around to find a solution for this problem. But once there is a little bit of rain, like last time, we have been telling all the villagers, you go for rainwater harvesting because the monsoon was good and everybody has seen so much of water around. They thought there may be no necessary for this and they went slow. But now, again, there's going to be a water scarcity. So the awareness itself can bring about a change. So once the entire village is determined to do this, it is possible to do.
In your groups, are there any challenges that you are facing in Maharashtra and Goa, Sadhisai Seva organization?
First, initially when we started, we thought the challenge is going to be technical expertise.
Technical expertise because you all are not in that field. Right?
Correct.
You are coming
Anyway, we decided, we always tell ourselves as coordinators, we are not experts. We need technical experts to guide us and we'll coordinate with the villages and get it implemented. So our role was very clear and none of our team members would ever claim that he's a water expert. It is only the technical expert like the geologist who would be pitching in and then helping us. We thought that is going to be a challenge. But over a period of time we realized that is not a big challenge. Plenty of such technical expertise is available, some of them free of cost also. They are willing to help. But the challenge could be then we thought is resources. Then as we went along, we found so many corporates, philanthropies and high net worth individuals. Individuals were also interested in donating money for this noble cause because water is a very sensitive subject. So that was also not a challenge. Then what is the challenge? As we went to implement, we found the cooperation from the villages, the local politics, the implementation level, the people to come forward to and help. Their own village, actually. It is for their own village. But still, the challenge is at the village level. So their participation, the local politics, all these and lack of awareness.
Okay.
All these are challenges.
Anything else you want to share about this topic?
Actually, there's a lot of stuff available in the net about the various implementation models, resources, the network. It is a very matured kind of industry, the rainwater harvesting as such. At this point in time, you don't have to go and start all over again from zero. This expertise is available, readily available on tap. And as I said, the CSR is a new dimension which has come in. Corporates are willing to fund these projects.
CSR is corporate social responsibility.
Okay. And now it is mandatory for certain companies who fit in the parameters to donate money for this social cause. Now the resources are available, technical expertise is available. So all that I say, there are plenty of NGOs looking for projects. there are trusts, NGOs and all, looking for meaningful projects. So all these things, when they combine together, they can be a potential unit. They can go and implement this water project. All that they have to do is awareness among NGOs first.
Yes, yes.
That this is a huge problem for the country as a whole. As we are talking today in this interview about water, you would find just 5 years away, everybody would be talking and debating only water. So we understand, say, as years pass by, the scarcity is going to be bigger and more intense. So right now, all these NGOs should declare emergency within and get into this rainwater harvesting project. Rainwater is freely available.
Yes, yes.
So there's the most economic way of reaching water. There's whatever water is falling on that village, that itself has to be harvested and given back to them. All that is required is only a working model by which the water can be harvested effectively and given back to the village. So that is a great seva. And all the NGOs, every NGO, on the other hand, I would say, right, they made a CSR donation as mandatory. They should also make rainwater harvesting mandatory for every NGO who is capable of doing that.
Yes.
That is very, very important, because the whole country, as I said, the number of villages in Maharashtra should be so many. And there are so many other villages which are drought hit. And every NGO has to pitch in and then do their bit so that the villages don't have to suffer because of water scarcity. So rainwater harvesting is so much important, of paramount importance, the whole scheme of things.
Good. Now, what are the future plans in Sajasai Seva organization in rainwater harvesting?
Actually, as we are talking now, tomorrow this techno group is going to meet and they asked me to give a talk on this rainwater harvesting. So water is also one of the important subjects they have taken, and they are bringing technology from different levels to working and implementation level. They are making it accessible for all. They are really doing human service. And organization as a whole has definitely a vision on this water-related seva projects. Going forward, I'm sure you can hear about these mega projects coming from our desk. At individual level also, whatever possible we can do to conserve water at our level, that we have to do, it's a very, very micro level. And also, if you are involved in seva projects and village seva projects particularly, just look around what we can do for the village. A simple rainwater harvesting could be in a school roof, whatever water is collected.
Yes, yes.
That could be just taken to a soak pit, and then we just internalize the water, take it to the aquifer, the water body will below. This water level will go up. So these kind of small things can be done even at a cost less than a lakh. A samiti itself can handle it at their level.
Yes.
So such small projects also should be, this is recharge of borewell or a well, which is costing less than a lakh. That kind of model is also available with us. We can also share it if anybody is interested in that. And such a small micro project should be done by many, many samitis. Every samiti has to at least adopt one village and give water. That is internally we have to decide and determine to do it.
Okay, sir. Thank you for sharing with us about this rainwater house.
Sairam.
Tune in to Sai. Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai. Thursday Live.
Radio Sai, Thursday Live.
Dear listeners, welcome back once again to today's Thursday Live. Greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Sinilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. Well, I'm Raghu from Team Radio Sai, and this is a segment, Service Love in Action, in which we talk to Swami's devotees and listen to what seva activities they are involved in, and also listen to the experiences of being involved in such service activities. So today in this segment, you just heard to a member of the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization for the state of Maharashtra and Goa, and in that he spoke to us about the rainwater harvesting project that they are undertaking. Well, the topic of rainwater harvesting, as you heard in the interview, is very important and is very vital to all of us. And Swami's devotees have taken this step in the state of Maharashtra for
this rainwater harvesting in many of the villages of Maharashtra. Well, in India, the state of Tamil Nadu is a role model for the rainwater harvesting. The government of Tamil Nadu has made it compulsory for every building to avoid groundwater depletion and has made it compulsory for having the techniques of rainwater harvesting for every building. And this has resulted within 5 years that 50% of the groundwater has improved in the city of Chennai. So, dear listeners, I hope this interview on rainwater harvesting was very useful and inspiring for all of you. Do send us your feedback and comments on this. As always, you can mail them to listener@radiosai.org. The time right now in our studio is just 5 minutes to 12 noon, and it's a beautiful afternoon here at Prashant Nilayam Ashram, a picture-perfect weather condition. As we move forward in this segment, let's take a short break and listen to a beautiful Sai Bhajan. After the Sai Bhajan, I'll be playing for you an audio documentary on another Seva story.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Noon. Welcome back, dear listeners, once again to today's Thursday Live, and it's a beautiful afternoon, a fine afternoon here at Prashantilam Ashram, the spiritual capital of the universe. So, moving forward in this segment, Service Love in Action, in which we bring you accounts of Swami's love and our love for Swami translating into service to humanity, I'll be playing for you right now an audio documentary which features the heroic service rendered by Sai Youth of Orissa, when a super-fast passenger train derailed in the dark of the night in the vicinity of the Sai Center. Well, as the passengers of the Coromandel Express boarded the train on 13th of February 2009, little did they know that their pleasurable journey will soon turn into a nightmare. So, dear listeners, let's listen to this audio documentary.
Running for thousands of miles, the superfast train Coromandel Express connects two major metros of India, Kolkata in the east and Chennai in the south. On that fateful day in February 2009, the Coromandel Express departed from Howrah station in Kolkata at 2:50 p.m. and proceeded at its normal pace of 70 kilometers an hour. By the time the sun went down, the train had crossed the state of West Bengal and was halfway into Orissa.
It was 7:45 p.m. Travelling at high speed by now, the train was about 100 kilometers away from Bhubaneswar, the capital of Orissa. Most of the passengers were either relaxing or enjoying their meals. And then, the speeding train screeched to an abrupt halt. The passengers were shattered. Before they knew what was happening, several carriages overturned. It was a full-speed derailment, the worst accident that could happen on a rail journey. The mayhem and panic that ensued was paralyzing. Screams and groans from every corner, pathetic pleas from the severely injured, agonized shrieks from terrified children, plaintive cries from people for their near and dear ones. The scene was simply heartrending. To make matters worse, the lights went out. The whole area was enveloped in a thick blanket of darkness. Mr. Sabuj Biswas was among the passengers. He was on his visit to Puttaparthi for Bhagwan Baba's darshan. He recalled that moment.
बहुत रोने की आवाज आ रही थी दो एक S6 में भी दो एक लेडीज थी जिनका खून बह रहा था.
Everyone was wailing in pain and agony. A few ladies in the coach number S6 were severely injured. It was completely dark. Using my cell phone light, I somehow managed to get out of the train through the door. I was actually very scared. All I could hear was people shouting and crying.
Mr. Biswas could not miss the compassion of God even in this tragic moment.
मेरा actual reservation था S4 में, तो मैं S4 से.
I had my berth reserved in coach number S4 of the train, and at the time of the accident, I was heading towards the pantry car to buy some food. After crossing coach number S5, I had barely entered coach number S6 when there was this enormously huge jolt, as if the train, which was running at full speed, had just hit a wall. There was a loud screech of brakes, and the next moment everything was in complete turmoil. All the 16 bogies of the train had derailed. Coach number S4, where I had my seat, and coach number S5, which I had just left, were completely upside down. But coach number S6, which I had just entered, stayed upright. It was found later that a wheel of that coach had become loose on impact, and that is why it had not overturned. That may be the technical explanation, but for me, it was the grace of Baba which saved me. What is also interesting is that the derailed train had finally come to rest just 50 meters from the Sai center of the area. It was the Jajpur Road in the state of Orissa in East India. And it was no mere chance that all the Sai devotees had gathered in the center that night to conduct their weekly bhajans. The moment the news of this tragedy reached them, they instantly organized themselves into groups of 60 each and rushed to the spot. Their sole goal was to save as many lives as possible, bring aid to the injured, and solace to the terrified and the grieving. These angels of Sai did a marvelous job.
In fact, the Sai devotees were the first rescuers to arrive at the scene of the accident. And when they started their work, the only source of light was their own mobile phones. What came to their rescue was their training in disaster relief and management. With a strong heart, they immediately started bringing out the injured from the coaches and desperately tried to save as many lives as they could. This definitely helped to reduce the number of casualties. Mr. Dhirendra Kumar Sahu, the Sai Youth Coordinator of that region, who led this initiative, recounted those tense moments.
Moments after the crash, one of our members called me. We immediately alerted the district collector and the nearby hospital and gathered a few doctors and rushed to the accident site. I cannot even begin to describe the wails and screams we heard on reaching there. It was pitch dark. 60 of us had reached within minutes, but we did not know where to start. We split into groups and started rescuing the injured passengers.
While a group of Sai workers were busy at the accident site, there were others who had converted the Sai temple into the official location for emergency first aid. Here, all the patients were provided immediate medical help and the most severely injured were transported to a local hospital. Besides physical and medical help, the Sai workers provided much needed emotional support to hundreds of distressed passengers. In fact, unhesitatingly, they jeopardized their own safety to rescue the injured from precariously tilted coaches.
What made the situation even more difficult was the biting cold weather outside, which only worsened the pain of the injuries. The Sai volunteers quickly procured blankets, and this was followed by the distribution of biscuit packets and hot drinks. Also, in an amazing show of efficiency and concern, they organized 3 full hot meals over the next 12 hours for over 1,000 people. All this did require tremendous effort, but for them, it was their way of expressing their devotion to Baba. Mr. Sabuj Vishwas, a survivor from the accident, recalled the service done by the Sai workers.
O mandir ke samne kuch seva dal dikhai diya iska batch pehne wala.
I was very soon taken to the Sai center, and there I found Sai volunteers rendering whatever help they could. They were giving first aid to the injured and transporting the severely wounded to a hospital. In fact, they offered wholehearted support to the patients. They were truly godsend, as they indeed were the first to come to our help. They even made arrangements for our dinner. They started giving out pouches of water and black tea to all of us. The children were given biscuits. They even brought us medicines that we desperately needed. When we saw such loving people offering help so selflessly, it greatly boosted our morale.
As all this was going on inside the Sai center, the other Sai workers were busy not only rescuing more passengers, but also collecting their displaced luggage and protecting it from theft and misuse. They handed over everything to the local police for safe custody, and because of this, even 2 days after the incident, many passengers could find all their belongings intact in the office of the railway police. The moment the Sai workers took the patients to the nearest hospital, the officials there admitted the injured without a question or a second of delay. Normally, in a situation where the injury is caused by an accident, the hospitals do not treat the patient till the police arrive. However, this was not the case here, because the staff of the hospital had great admiration and trust in the Sai volunteers. These inspired youngsters had actually been visiting the hospital every Sunday, as early as 6 in the morning, for many months, to clean the premises and enliven the spirits of the patients by offering them physical and emotional help. What they did that fateful night was an extension of this regular service. What really touched the traumatic passengers was the spontaneous love of the Sai devotees. Mr. Dhirendra Sahu recalled that scene.
In the immediate hours after the accident, all the passengers were dazed. They were in a state of shock. Our Sai sisters sat by the side of each passenger and spoke to them lovingly, like they were their own family members. They gave their cell phones to them so that they could talk to their near and dear ones. This really helped to infuse a lot of courage into the mind of these distressed people and gave them confidence to face the situation with fortitude. The Sai sisters worked till late in the night with great love. People still tell me how they fondly recall the love and sensitivity of our Sai sisters.
All these timely and efficient initiatives of the Sai volunteers inspired many others in the village to join the service. This only added to the number of Sai volunteers. The local government authorities also became active. They brought lanterns, more blankets, biscuits, and so on. The Sai Center, however, remained the central coordinating point for the entire rescue operation. In fact, the Sai volunteers' service extended even to helping the distressed passengers complete their journey. Mr. Bishwas shared his own story.
Next day, Prasanti Express, Visakhapatnam to Puttaparthi. So, main kaise jaun? Jajpur se to bahut dur hai.
I realized I needed to catch the Prasanti Express next day from Visakhapatnam to reach Puttaparthi. But my biggest worry was to get there in time. It was a long way from Jajpur, the site of the accident. The Sai workers, however, were very kind. They arranged a van for me to reach Bhubaneswar, from where the Prasanti Express begins. Like me, there were 12 other people who wanted to come to Prasanthinilayam, and they were all helped by the Sai volunteers to catch their trains.
Many passengers were moved by the intense interest displayed by the Sai workers to reach out and help. And they expressed this through emails and letters after they reached their destinations safely. One such letter was from Mr. P.M. Gunasilan from Chennai. This is what he wrote to the convener of the Sai Center of Jajpur.
Respected sir, after finishing my work in Kolkata, I started on my journey to my hometown by the Coromandel Express on that fateful day. At about 7:45 p.m., the accident occurred, and I was sure that those of us who had survived the accident would die due to lack of timely rescue. I and my co-passengers felt completely lost in that entirely new place during that terrible night. We did not even know the local language to be able to ask for help. We felt like we were in a dense forest without any directions. At that time, you and the other Sai Baba devotees took care of us. Not only this, you provided food, shelter, and essential medical care to those of us who were affected. we did not feel that we were amidst strangers. We felt as if we were with our own brothers and sisters. Your concern and care made us feel better to such an extent that we forgot our painful wounds. I admire the seva you people did and will never be able to forget it. When you took us to your place, I was almost spellbound to see the two Sai Baba photos there. At that moment, I felt as if something inside my soul was fulfilled. All my worries melted away. With the kindness of the great Sai Baba, we all reached Chennai safely. Even when we reached Chennai Central, the Sri Satya Sai Seva Samiti devotees came to help us. This just moved my heart.
On their part, the Sai Sevadal volunteers insist that all through the trying times, they felt the protecting hand of Bhagwan Baba guiding them. Mr. Sahu explained this.
The greatest fact about this whole service activity is that each one of us felt the divine presence. It was as if someone higher was in charge. It wasn't merely a human effort.
This is clear from the site of the accident. If it had happened even 100 meters further down the route, there would certainly have been a lot more severe casualties. This is because after a few meters, the rails climb high and the surrounding area becomes quite low. If the accident had occurred there, the train would probably have somersaulted, killing hundreds instantly. Besides, it would have taken the Sai devotees longer to reach there and help out. The accident providentially happened near the Sai center and at a time when many devotees were there in the center. This ensured that initial help efforts could be coordinated immediately.
The selfless service provided by the Sai organization has surely helped in bringing solace and joy to hundreds. But how has it helped the volunteers themselves? Mr. Sahu, the youth coordinator, reflected his team's feelings.
To undertake a service project as a personal activity and do the same thing under the banner of the Sri Satya Sai Seva organizations are two very different experiences. When I go to a hospital alone, people there might suspect my intentions or I may even develop an ego about the work I do. This may create problems. On the other hand, when we do the work as an activity of the Sai organization, there is no I there. It is we. Instead of being treated with suspicion, we are welcomed. Bhagwan is the divine force of this organization and He has created this to improve our lives even as we help the others. Here, we stand up as models before society. One must have the desire to contribute to society's welfare.
Quoting Baba's dictum of help ever, hurt never, He says that we need to help others so that we become worthy of Baba's grace and love.
We have to be humble to receive Bhagwan in our lives. In fact, I consider it a great blessing. Swami has given me this wonderful opportunity to demonstrate to others how treading on the path laid down by Him can change our lives completely for the better. I only pray that He never denies me this fortune of being an instrument in His hands.
It is because of such a noble attitude of these youth of that region that the Sai organization of Jajpur has become a great force of positive transformation. Plenty of other youth who were otherwise misguided are now happy to be part of this organization and they too experience the joy of selfless service. So what exactly appeals to these youngsters about the Sai organization?
Premai Bhagwan.
It is just love. Our speciality is love.
That is Dhirendra Sahu, the youth leader.
We
never distinguish between people and organizations. if I cannot take the other person as my brother in God, how can we understand each other? And unless we work in unity, how can we work for God? And if we cannot work for God, how can we love each other? As you can see, it is all beautifully related. In our organization, it is not I, it is always we. And finally, he. I think this is what attracts the younger generation to this organization.
This is how the Brotherhood of Sai is growing in this little town, hidden in one of the most underdeveloped states of India. The love of Sai has no boundaries, and the magic that it creates in transforming hearts is as heartening as it is mystifying.
All of us felt a kind of exhilaration in being able to bring succor to the poor victims of the train accident. We may not have slept a night, but the joy of participating in helping so many people is really indescribable. We are eternally grateful to Bhagwan Baba for giving this opportunity to be of use to others in their time of need. What other special blessing can we ask for?
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners, once again, greetings and a warm welcome to today's Thursday Live. This is a segment, Service, Love in Action, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. Well, what you heard just now was an audio documentary which featured the heroic service rendered by Sai youth of Orissa, of Indian state of Orissa, when a super-fast passenger train, Coromandel Express, derailed in the dark of the night on February 13, 2009. Well, the time in our studio right now is 12:23 p.m. and it's a fine afternoon here at Prashantala Ashram, the spiritual capital of the universe. In the first half of today's segment, Service Love in Action, I played for you a conversation that I had recorded a couple of weeks back with a member of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization for the Indian states of Maharashtra and Goa. And in that conversation, he spoke to us about a very important and vital topic, that is rainwater harvesting. So, dear listeners, you would have heard how Swami's devotees have taken this rainwater harvesting as a service in the state of Maharashtra. Well, in today's scenario, this is a very important topic as water crisis is everywhere in this entire world. So, dear listeners, as Swami says, service is very important. Paropakarartham idam shariram. This very human body is given to us to serve others. So today, for Swami's devotees, service to society has become a part of their life. Just as breakfast, lunch and dinner is part of our life, service to be involved in seva, has become their part of their life. Sai devotees are very regular in taking part in service activities. So, dear listeners, you all share with us about your experience of being involved in service activities. More than that, what service activities you are involved in. Please share with us. You can email us to listener@radiosai.org, or also you can send us a short audio clip. You can record it at your home with the minimal noise, and you can send us the MP3 of the audio clip. We'll be playing for you in one of the Thursday Lives during the segment Service Love in Action. So right now the time in our studio is 12:25 and it's time for me to sign off for today. Up next is Afternoon Satsang with Prem and Arvind. So as always, I place this segment at Bhagwan's lotus feet and I thank him profusely for giving me this opportunity to host this segment, Service Love in Action, every Thursday. So meet you again next Thursday. Jai Sai Ram. Stay tuned. ¶¶
విఠల రకుమాయి.
Amar Shah.